Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them. If you had to buy a new Land Rover today, what would you get?
A new, brand new.
Brand new.
Defender 110.
Yeah, okay. I think I'm...
Immediately.
Yeah.
You can still get it with 3 litre, can't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. That, basically.
I think I'd 110 or 130. I really like the 130. After I had one for a week, I could definitely see why you'd want that extra space.
See, I'm not keen on. It looks awkward. A bit like this is a bit of a controversial, but I find the 90 new Defender 90 a little bit odd looking as well.
Yeah. See, now I've come round to the new 90. The more I see them, the more I like them. I thought the same as you to begin with. I thought they looked a little bit out of proportion. Like,
yeah.
The door's really long.
Yeah. Yeah. They don't. The 110 for me is new Land Rover perfection.
Okay.
We probably, I don't know if you do, but on the way to this office, sometimes there's a black 130 that goes the other way along the bypass.
Yeah, there's a red one as well that I see sometimes.
I've not seen the red
on the way.
It's all got tinted windows. It looks quite special. It's a top. Someone spent a lot of money, probably over £100,000.
Probably, yeah.
But that massive though.
They are wide, but they're lovely to drive. The new Defenders. To be honest, the entire new range, even with massive wheels, like 23-inch alloys now on Range Rover and Sport.
It's big.
They do drive exceptionally well. But no, I'd have a new Defender as well, definitely. Either 110 or 130. Well, I'd have any of them, actually. A 90 to a 130, because I do believe they all have their advantages and disadvantages. But I would definitely not turn down a new Defender.
No.
The reason I ask...
Well, have you been... bashed for new land, for moaning about new Land Rovers.
Not bashed, but okay. I am aware that we're perhaps not quite as complimentary about the mechanical side of things as we should be when it comes to the newer shaped Land Rovers.
No, we're not.
We're a bit quick to push aside all the things they do brilliantly and focus on the what's under the bonnet.
I'll give you an example of this, right? So the other day, at the weekend, I was driving along and. With my wife, and completely out of the blue, I'm driving along in an estate car at this point, a BMW 3 Series estate. Out of the blue, my wife Louise goes, "Oh," she goes, "we could get a Discovery Sport." Unprovoked conversation.
Really?
I was like, "Right." And then I have to be honest here and put my hands up. I immediately told her all the reasons why you shouldn't own a Discovery Sport, and that is wrong.
Yeah.
Because exactly. I told her, but essentially, like, you know, the engine's this, the engineer boom, is all this stuff. And she was like, yeah, but why do all these people drive them then? I said, well, good point.
Yes, indeed.
Because there are a lot of them on the road.
I've had just this week 2 Discovery Sport-related emails.
Okay.
Would you like to hear one of them?
Yeah. Are we getting told off, or is it a nice email?
A bit of both in this one. I don't think it's being told off as such, but anyway. Robert Murray, he goes, "Hi, gents. Massive fan of the podcast, listening all the way over in New Zealand. One thing I'm not a fan of is a lack of love for the Discovery Sport." So a bit of a slap on the wrist.
Yeah. I get him.
"I find this particularly perplexing given the love of the Freelander 2 you both seem to express." Probably from me more than you, because yours was a bit of a dog.
But I still do like the Freelander 2.
"Less of a question and perhaps more of a challenge. Can you make a positive case for the Discovery Sport, and is it a worthy addition to Land Rover's stable? For context, I own a 2018 petrol model that I've lifted with IBAC springs and is very capable both on and off the road. Obviously not for like rock crawling or serious off-roading, but brilliant for touring and milder stuff. And for that, I have a 1997 Discovery 1 V8, but I certainly enjoy driving the Discovery Sport more. What are your thoughts? Cheers, Rob."
Yeah, I mean... Having watched your Freelander, I mean, going back to Freelander 2 for a second, green laning the other day up in Yorkshire, yours, like almost, why am I enduring all of this road work in a TD590 when I could enjoy that? So with a Discovery Sport with slightly raised suspension. In fact, I've not seen a modified Discovery Sport in my entire life.
No, there is another fella, I forget his name, but he sends in photos for Month in Pictures occasionally, or the Your Pictures pages, and he's got a modified Discovery Sport, and it looks really smart.
But I've seen one in the flesh. I've never seen one. But
No, they don't tend to really. They're not. There's not many around here. They're, like in the UK, people aren't really modifying them yet. Evokes have just started to come into modifying. Muddy Mods, they did a brilliant Evoke. Slight lift, slightly wider wheels and tires, spacers. They're doing like roof rack and things like that for them. But Discovery Sports sort of flown under the radar a bit, hasn't it?
That, I was just going to say it's gone under the radar because it's probably the kind of car that's driven by an enthusiast.
Yeah.
That also has an older Land Rover as well in the stable. So that's their daily. And they, you know, they forgive it for its foibles. But people who just drive a Discovery Sport who are not enthusiasts, then they're never going to. It's always the forums, isn't it, that say negative things about, and Facebook groups that say negative things about them. And
yeah,
most general motorists don't get online and moan about their cars.
No. Well, as we said, so it's kind of briefly alluded to before, a lot of people, new buyers who aren't necessarily enthusiasts but love the Land Rover brand and love having a Land Rover, they don't really care about. They don't research it. They go into a Land Rover dealer and say, I need four seats. I don't need anything that can tow loads of weight. What should I get? And they'll go into a Discovery Sport or a Velar, maybe an Evoque. They want the badge. They're not looking to buy anything else. They just want a Land Rover, Range Rover, whatever. Because not even a status symbol, I'm sure that does come into it, but some people have either grown up with them in their lives the whole time and they love it and they're brand loyal, which is fantastic, but they're not necessarily the sort of person who would spend 3 hours on Honest John reading reviews from other people. They know what they want. They go into the dealer, they buy it. If it breaks, you know, that's obviously terrible. But
There are a lot of people that can afford to put things right anyway. And, you know, we work in sort of modern day publishing, so we're not furnished with massive bank accounts to as a dig in case our bosses ever listen to this. But, you know, I've never bought a Land Rover from a main dealer before.
No.
And I think it would be something that would be actually really nice to do.
I bought one from a main dealer once.
Oh, you worked there?
My £2,000 scrappage scheme disco one.
You saved from scrappage? Well,
yeah. I'm sure I've told the story before on the podcast.
You have actually. But I think the whole retail experience of actually buying a pre-owned all new Land Rover from a Land Rover dealership must be quite lovely.
I'd love to do it,
actually. Yeah.
I remember I was looking on their local dealer website, main dealer website, it's not that long ago, and this is actually what I was getting onto, because he mentions he's got a 2 litre petrol disco sport,
yes,
which is probably not that desirable in this country because everyone likes diesels. But there was, I think I showed you, didn't I? It was a 2018 2 litre petrol Discovery Sport for sale at the dealer.
Wasn't that much money.
It was like 16 grand.
Yeah, wasn't that much for a lot of car for the money.
Yeah.
And wasn't it sold?
Yeah, it sold. I was looking at it and it was an hour or two later it had gone. It sold that quickly.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I'm hardly surprised really because that's an awful lot of car for the money.
And it's like, if you went and financed that, say if you didn't have a penny to your name and you needed a personal loan in the UK, you could get, most people have the ability to better borrow that kind of money over 4 or 5 years, and it might cost you £275 a month or something in repayments. Not that bad. But I would just say, I don't know, my advice would be, I mean, let's talk about warranties, right? So would you buy one out of warranty?
I buy petrol.
Yeah, it's the Genium. It's well well documented. But
we're not dwelling on that. We're not dwelling on that. We're focusing on the positives. And I actually think the Discovery Sport is a brilliant car. The first and second generation.
Yeah,
post.
They are really, really nice.
They've
been out for a long time, haven't they?
Really long time. Yeah, they came out 2015. Which brings me on to my next email about the Discovery Sport. Rich Freeland, who's emailed once before about the Discovery 4 camshaft pulley upgrade.
Oh, yes, yeah.
He says, my in-laws are contemplating entering into the Land Rover world. See, it shows they're a good entry-level model with this pretty cool colour Discovery Sport. He attached an image which is of a really cool sort of reddish-orange Discovery Sport. You don't see many at all in that colour. He goes on to say, it's a 2015, but I don't know if it's an Ingenium or a 2.2. Because if it's a 2.2, obviously that's the one you want to go for. If it's an Ingenium, you know, for the reasons we've covered many times before in this podcast, you want to be a little bit more careful. But he didn't know how to tell. So what I did was I took the reg, I put it in on the .gov UK website, vehicle inquiry check, which tells you the CC number.
Yes.
So if it's 1998 or whatever, then it's a 2 litre Ingenium. If it's 2.1, I can't remember the exact CC, 2.197.
Yeah, something, yeah.
It's a 2.2. Unfortunately, this one is a 2 litre. But do you know what? For the right money, and if it's got history, if it's had an engine, if it's had the upgraded timing chain, and if it's the right price, it's a great car. I had one for a couple of weeks, years and years ago, when I worked in the dealer, to go down to Devon and Cornwall on holiday. And I would say it possibly does lack the character of the Freelander 2. It's a little bit more generic inside.
It's probably going to, though, because they've softened the edges. Obviously. Yeah. They've made it much more refined.
The interior is nowhere near as chunky. It doesn't feel quite as hard-wearing, but it's a beautiful thing to drive.
Do you know what? I have never driven a Discovery Sport.
Well, hopefully that will change, because I'm going to have a nice word with our friends at JLR, and we're going to test some newer stuff out again, because it's been a while, hasn't it?
I think for me, it's kind of when you used to drive in TD5s and TDIs, and you might have a go in some of these V8 something, whatever, or go along in your Series 3 or your early 110. Our old boss, who's since retired, he had a Velar on a company thing, and that I did quite a few miles driving that, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It was, two litre diesel, and it got down the road really quite well, pulled well. And that's an Ingenium engine, wasn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
phenomenal. Here's the thing, just before, right, so I've just been thinking, does it make, or would it make, from a mechanical point of view, absolute financial sense to buy one that's in really, really lovely condition, all the service history and all that, with a blown engine from somebody who may be like, get this thing off my drive, and then investing in a new engine with all the
latest stuff? I think yes.
Because you're starting from, you know, mechanically that's been done with a proper engine.
Yeah. I think that's a really interesting point. And I think, yes, I do believe
Let's get to the classifieds. Come on.
You don't have to search far.
How much is an engine for one?
Spares or repairs? I actually don't
know. These are new projects in my life.
We need...
not.
You can obviously get them through Britpart retailers. They sell complete Ingenium engines.
Yeah.
There's several companies around the country as well that will either rebuild or replace your Ingenium. But I think you do touch on a good point there. If you find an Evoque, a Disco Sport, a Velar, anything, even things like Discovery 4, the late Disco 4s with the AdBlue, which you can drive in EU6 or whatever they are, EU5.
Euro, you mean?
No, EU6 emissions, Euro 6 emissions.
Sorry.
If you find one that you think, oh, wow, that's absolutely gorgeous, and it's everything you dreamed of in that car, buying one with a blown-up engine, as long as the rest of the history is good and the rest of the condition is good, and putting in it a brand-new or a high-quality, remanufactured engine in it, is probably not a bad way to go about it, because you know it's been done.
And you start from... It's like a new relationship, isn't it? Like new car ownership. Mm. Tell you who gave us that tip.
Go on.
Adam Wormleighton, who listens to this podcast.
Yes.
He told you to buy a cheap Discovery 4, didn't he? And then just have, basically when it blows up, stick an engine in it.
Yeah. Or
not.
Buy it, enjoy it, and then if it blows up, just chalk it down to experience. But yeah, I'd sooner keep it going, to be fair.
So if we're awash with Discovery Sports with blown engines.
Yeah, in spares or repairs condition.
Spares or repair condition, but ultimately, like, it's been a lovely, cherished family car, just blown up. The guy's financed, it's up to the hill, can't afford to do anything with it. Help, get it off my drive.
Yeah.
I would say get an HPI check, though, on anything like that.
Oh, definitely.
Because a lot of people who say can't necessarily afford to repair the engine might have finance on the car, so still the finance belongs on the car.
You do need to tread a bit carefully.
Tread carefully.
Definitely.
That's not a bad way in.
I don't think so.
For those that mechanic,
Because at some point, this is the thing, we've already seen it with the early 2015 Discovery Sports with with the 2.2, which everyone wants, you know, they're not going to be around forever.
Well, they're going to just get old and worn out, and that'd be the end.
Exactly. So actually, at some point, we're going to have to adopt the newer stuff. We are. And if that means buying one that needs work, you know, substantial work, and then doing that, so be it. Because otherwise, you know, like, I was speaking to Warren from Muddy Mods the other day, because as I have been banging on about since we started this podcast, I'd love a 13 or a 14 plate Freelander 2. And he was like, honestly, even rust is getting to them now. The latest ones, subframe, well, sealed,
12,
arches.
13 years old. They've had a hard life.
So, yeah, Discovery Sports might be the next step on. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I've got me on about Discovery Sports now. It's my wife that said this. Well, my wife set the seed like last weekend. It's like, why don't we get Discovery Sport? And I spent probably 10 minutes lecturing her as to what a stupid idea it was.
Yeah.
Tactfully. Because we didn't argue. She just went, oh, okay. So what did we get then? So, well, 300 TDI. No.
Yeah. No,
but like, it does beg the question. A modified, with a rack and all the gear, Discovery Sport probably is a really good all-rounder.
Definitely, definitely.
And you could do green laning with it.
Yeah.
Because it would be just as capable, if not more.
It'll be more capable.
In your Freelander 2. And that went to places where I never thought it would go.
More modern traction control.
In fact, by the time this podcast is out, would that be feature of the week? That's a segue and a half.
Oh, Steve, you've put me on the spot here. Crikey. No, not quite.
Well,
look forward to that feature next week when the magazine
basically
comes out.
I didn't segue that very successfully.
No, but it's all fine. Yeah. It's the end of the day, and we've all had a busy one.
End of the day, right?
Go on.
We're on overtime. Well, not quite. It's 10 to 5.
Yeah, we're not quite on overtime yet. But
keep talking.
What, are you going to sign off a time card?
No.
I've gone down a proper rabbit hole on early coil sprung Land Rovers.
Didn't I see you share some literature?
I bought a book.
Oh, you bought a book? Yes.
Yeah, I'm quite, obviously, you know, the position that I find myself in, I'm quite lucky to be sent quite a lot of books, but I do still buy books, Land Rover books that I want. Nick Dimbleby's most excellent Camel Trophy book was the one that I bought last before this. But because I'm absolutely loving my B-Reg 110, I thought, right, James Taylor's done a book on these, I'm going to buy it. And I did. And it is full of absolute nuggets of information that I didn't know about. For instance, you know, on the early diesels where you have to manually hold the key on the sprung bit for the glow plugs.
Yeah.
Did you know that the orange glow plug light starts dim and gets brighter as the plugs heat up?
I did not know that.
Nor did I.
I just, the light never goes off though, does it?
No, you hold it until it goes to its full illumination. And
I did not know that.
It. I want to wait till it's dark and try it on my 110 tonight, because I think it just, like, I've never noticed it get brighter, but apparently that is a function. And also the ashtray in the middle of the dash was an option starting in 1985.
All cars in the 80s had ashtrays, didn't they?
Yes, but on the really early ones, it was an option to have it underneath the dashboard rather than the mid-mounted one that everyone knows about with Defenders.
Okay.
I am absolutely brimming with useless facts.
When you take up smoking, you can just say, did you know?
Yeah.
Just like,
well, mine was one of the first to have one of these ashtrays, I'll have you know, in the top of the dashboard. But no, if you're into any sort of early coil sprung stuff, 90s, 110s, 127s, definitely get yourself a copy of that book, because it is really, really good.
So I saw that on probably Instagram. You shared it, didn't
you? Yeah, yeah.
And even the front cover just makes you go, oh.
Yeah.
They look so right, don't they? Early coil stuff.
Really, really, really good imagery in there. And yeah, some, like I say, a lot of facts that I certainly didn't know. Lots of identifying markers throughout the years, because obviously the coil sprung was quite new to the utility Land Rover, so Land Rover was still constantly developing it through those early years until 1990 happened, and then Defender came along. But it was like a real development.
It's quite nice to get involved in the history.
Definitely, yeah. I would thoroughly recommend it. And even if you're not into those...
Is it a hardback book?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do you know what I found weird when I ordered it? I got it off Amazon. It was 14 quid for the hardback book delivered, or 20 quid digitally.
What?
That's exactly what I thought. Why would I pay an extra £6 to not have a book? I want a book. Give me a book.
Yeah, proper print.
Yeah, I was thoroughly enjoying
it. Yeah, there's a lot of decent books.
James Taylor really does. Yeah, he's very, very good. And, of course, our own Gary Pusey just never ceases to amaze me with the nuggets he digs up and finds and researches every single month in the pages of Land Rover Monthly magazine.
Which is like a book in itself.
It is.
And it changes every 4 weeks.
What a delight. 100% fresh content every 4 weeks. What is there not to like?
Anyway, right, I'm surprised you haven't noticed how thin I am this week.
Why? I mean...
Because I've been getting my steps in.
No comment.
Yeah. No, I'm not thin. But I've been getting my steps in.
Doing what?
Well, going to and from my garage, looking at my freshly painted bulkhead.
You have been pretty busy, haven't you?
I have been busy. But so those who haven't checked it out yet, I did a colour reveal of my Project 90 on Instagram.
Yes.
And did a bit of a reel. So check it out on Steve_Miller_automotive if you want to have a look. So basically the colour is, as I probably said last week actually, it's a Porsche burgundy colour from the late 60s, 70s. And it looks very brown.
Yes.
So our friend Greg King shared a brown an extract from Top Gear.
Yeah.
And he was saying, I've got this orange, is it Mustang?
Comparing
it. Yeah. Because it's brown. And I've been so worried, like, I've made a mistake on the colour choice. I've been going in and out of the garage countless times.
You did have a proper complex the first time you picked that bulkhead up, as I'm sure we mentioned before. But I think you've made the right choice.
Checking it in different lights and just, I don't want to commit to, like, more paint. But the paint is like, text me yesterday going, are you bringing me any more powder? Like,
oh. I'm still contemplating my life choices.
I'm keeping it.
You should keep it. It's the right thing to do.
I couldn't imagine turning up to him and saying, we've made a mistake. Can you paint it a different colour?
No.
It's happening.
Good.
But I've been very busy.
It will look great.
In the workshop. We had a great day last week, didn't we?
Last Friday, yeah. We did make some good progress, didn't we?
Well, a right nice day of, good, what was it, 10 hours?
It was loose ends, wasn't it? I can't remember what time we started, but yeah, it was a fair old day on it, wasn't it?
It was a fair day where we did all the loose ends, all the swivels that I haven't done. Well, I have done swivels, but you needed to...
Yeah, that's right.
Things, yeah. We thinking did, about it, there's lock washers.
I was going to bring them in today, but I couldn't be bothered to go to the garage. It was raining this morning.
It was raining, yeah. But all of those bits and pieces of we needed a day of tying up all the loose ends, checking things, and now I've been painting.
Have we really not done a podcast since last Friday?
No.
We haven't, have we? Oh, we've got things to talk about. Yeah, project update.
No, we haven't done one.
No, we haven't. We've been busy, haven't we?
The week has gone really fast.
It has. It's flown
back
by.
Back to back meetings today.
Oh, what a treat.
Martin is still talking to me. Amazing.
Only just. Well, only because we've got to do a podcast.
Martin, about 2 hours ago, wanted to kill me. But anyway, new projects coming out.
Yes. No, I mean, we did. It was one of those where, to look at, on the face of it, we didn't really achieve that much, visually. But when you add up all the loose ends we tied up, like the transfer box seal, the handbrake, reconditioning that.
Yeah, that's all been put on. We've got working handbrake now and essentially on the cable.
Packed all your front wheel bearings, preloaded your swivels. What else did we do?
You found that my front prop shaft, the slider, I didn't even check the slider. I've degreased the damn thing.
Yeah.
Painted the prop shaft. Oh, yeah, brilliant. You went, are you going to unseize your slider? It's like... Oh, no. And that is C-solid. I have whacked there in the vice.
Yeah.
Whacked like mad. Just to see if I could unseize it. I was always going to replace it. That will not budge.
No, it is proper. The thing is, I mentioned to you, when the water gets under the non-slip plastic coating on the splines and swells them up, they just lock up completely inside. And to be honest, even if you did manage to knock it apart and kind of clean it up a bit, it would still never be perfect. So for the price, a new prop shaft's the way to go on that.
So I've just checked. So I knocked probably about an inch of the slider out, and the plastic collar then that you've just said about is all rucked up, and it's all like splintery. And
that prop is probably original.
No, I looked at the part number. It's of a classic Range Rover, of all things. The part number corresponds to it. So it must be exactly the same as a...
Oh, that's weird.
Classic Range Rover. The back one is original. Well, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Well, the original thing.
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Anyway, yeah, so fitted all the prop shaft on the back, done the handbrakes on, the handbrake drum, new shoes. The tub is ready to go to paint. Well, we've just got to align that and we just drilled some holes for the rear crossmember. The tub is now ready.
Yeah.
It's going to move on.
Definitely.
The brake lines. We did some brake lines, didn't we?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Made up the little link pipes for the front calipers to the flexies. And, yeah, fitted all three new flexies, didn't we?
And unlike you, I've painted my heater box.
Well, everyone on YouTube will be very happy. They'll be chuffed. Everyone in the comments.
All one or two people.
They'll be buzzing.
Show that man how to use a can of paint.
I was, funnily enough, Jack Boris the Defender on Instagram shared a reel which was really sort of reaffirming as to what I said the other day on the podcast about not... about the difference between re-chassising something and fully restoring it. When you're re-chassising something, you're replacing a rotten chassis with a galvanised chassis. That's what we did with my Series 3.
And replacing any properly worn parts along
the way. Of course. And he did something similar with Boris. That had a new bulkhead first, and then the chassis was no good, so he replaced the chassis. He hasn't taken the whole thing to 1,000 bits and agonised over cleaning and replating every single bolt and, you know, rubbing brackets back and repainting them because he wants it back on the road so he can go and use it again.
Yeah, absolutely. And my issue is the other way, where now I can't put anything rusty and I'm still taking things off the old bulkhead.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, going, well, that needs complete refurbishment. So even painting a servo, it's taken me... I mean, someone will go, oh, just stick a rattle can over it. No, because I've had to take it back to almost bare metal.
Yeah,
I hope that servo is any good because
that's still like, no idea if it works or not. But at least it'll look nice.
Well, it did work, and it's been in the dry. It's never been in a damp shed or anything, so that's been like a few hours of sanding and priming and painting to get
the thing is though.
It's
important that you do that now because you've got all the bodywork is going to be freshly painted. The last thing you want to do is put it all together and go, oh, I wish I'd painted that servo. Take the servo off again,
scratch something, damage something.
It's a waste of time.
So I noticed that I've maintained this, that if I can just do something every day.
Yep.
Even as little as half an hour, but to be fair, most days have been like the time goes really fast and I'm just doing something every day and eventually it will be done.
Yeah. That's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And you go.
And I'm enjoying the process. I'm obsessing about it now, which is a really good thing because I've got my head in gear.
Mm. There's nothing better. I when I first bought the Series 3 at my old house, I did the same thing. And it was like, you really get a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day, even if you've had a fairly non-productive day in other ways for whatever reason. If you get those bolts out where the water pump was or you get that stuck window moving again or you, I don't know, rub back that rust or whatever, you feel like, yeah, actually have moved forward.
It's amazing what you can do in half an hour if you just decide I'm going out there for half an hour whilst, I don't know, dinner's cooking or something.
Yeah.
You just go out there, do something and think, do you know what? I could have sat there wasting time on
TikTok.
Facebook or something. TikTok.
Steve's favourite.
No, I'm not really on TikTok that much. There is some Land Rover stuff coming through on TikTok.
I'm sure there is. Yeah.
Not from LRM yet, though.
No, I'll need to get on that, really.
We do need to get on it. But, to be properly accomplished and cool.
Well, I've got the account name. That's the first thing I did. One of the first things I did when I started here was make sure that no one else could steal the Land Rover Monthly TikTok name, but I've done precisely nothing with it since then.
No. I want to know, going back to Discovery Sports,
yeah,
right, I think it's high time that we had people who have got one that have only got positive things to say.
Yeah.
To email editorial@lrm.co.uk and tell me why you love your Discovery Sport
Convince
us and other listeners why you should buy a modern Land Rover.
Yeah, do it.
And it brings us along, doesn't it, rather than moaning about them.
I don't want, this is the thing, I desperately want to love everything that Land Rover does. And for the most part, the design-wise and drive-wise, they are just incredible vehicles. But you can't ignore that they do have their issues. But I want the love of what it is to be stronger than the, what about that? Do you know what I mean?
But some of these problems, right, they can all be solved. It's just how deep your pockets are. How much do you want to invest in it?
The other thing is,
don't run it on a shoestring.
We only move in Land Rover circles. We're only fussed really about what they do. But when you look at other modern manufacturers, BMW, yeah, Mercedes, Ford, they're probably worse in a lot of ways than what JLR do for reliability. Yeah,
we're not in those circles, so we don't know what people are saying about their modern Vauxhall.
When you dabble and you sort of a pint of petrol, for instance, our good friend Ian Arthur and Tim, they commonly rip Ford for the wet belt, which is in loads of different vehicles, loads of different models, and rightly so, because it's an absolutely ridiculous idea.
Do you know what? I'll talk about a wet belt quickly. So we've had to recently help sell a Ford Fiesta, 14 plate, 27,000 miles from new.
That'll want an engine then?
Elderly gentleman, relative, passed away. The car needed to be sold. Because the wider family decided, we don't really want to have to sell a car from the driveway. We went to We Buy a Car.
Oh, yeah.
I've never dealt with them before.
No, I haven't.
They offered a price online. Mm-hmm. Lovely. This thing was, to say it was an immaculate was an understatement. The back seats had never really been sat in. The thing was as clean as a whistle, showroom ready. It's had full service history, but never had a wet belt. Immediately, they take off £1,200 from the online price.
Really?
For turning up. So I've heard this before. Yeah, they'll knock you for £100 or £200 or a chip here or a chip there. There were no stone chips, but they knocked it for £1,200. That's interesting because the wet belt is £1,200.
I would imagine that's because they know that, because they will auction that car.
They'll have to retail it.
Well, yeah, but then every dealer who goes to bid on that car when they send it through their BCA or whatever auction, they will go, ooh, there's another wet belt, and no one will bid good money for it. For those who haven't heard of the wet belt debacle, it's a rubber cam belt that runs in oil.
That then breaks up.
That breaks
bits of rubber join block the oil wells. Is that correct?
Indeed, yes. Who would have thought that a rubber...
Ingenie booms, these are eco booms.
They are, exactly. Spinning around thousands and thousands of times in oil would degrade. And when it does, all the little fibres sit in the sump, they get sucked up by the oil pickup strainer. Yeah. Starve the engine of oil, engine goes kaboom. And then that's the end of that. They're serious. Big business.
Land Rover don't make anything with wet belts.
No.
Just Ford.
Ford put it in everything, I think, pretty much.
Yeah, I've heard about like Ford Transits and things.
Transits, Fiestas, obviously, Focuses. I can't remember if the old KA or whatever had it before they stopped producing them.
We're turning into a Ford month for here.
Oh yeah, crikey, we've gone down a Ford rabbit hole. But no, but as I say, there's other it's not just JLR. There's a lot of other manufacturers making silly engineering decisions.
Yeah, yeah,
and that's just the way it is. That's modern cars for you, Steve. You don't get that with a 2.5 non-turbo, do you?
No, you don't. And the question now is, why have you not bought the 110 into work yet?
Oh, I don't know, actually. That's a great point.
Yeah.
I'll bring it in next time I come in.
Okay, just leave early.
It's really not that bad.
How many people do you think would follow you to work, would be behind you? Because you're going to make a lot of people very late.
Look, you have to come out in it. It isn't that bad.
No, I've not been out. I've not been out.
No, you haven't. You followed it to the MOT station. The video is, of course, on the LRM YouTube channel, so check
That's
it out.
Great.
Subscribe. We're almost at 6,000 subscribers now.
We've got some good stuff, actually. We've got pretty much a video planned or have planned for 1 week, haven't we?
We have done, yeah, recently.
Yeah. Doesn't mean that's going to be consistent, though.
No, we've got a lot of plates to spin, but we're doing what we can. But no, that's really good.
We were going to read out some comments, weren't we, on YouTube?
Well, I think we're going to dedicate a bit of podcast to the comments. I think we'll print some off and we'll react to the comments, because reaction videos are really cool right now.
Oh, are they?
People are all about reaction videos, yeah. But no,
yeah.
The 110, do you know what? I love driving it. I think it's great. And it rides and steers and it brakes beautifully. I'm so happy with it. Obviously, not the fastest thing in the world. And being a mid-80s diesel engine, it smokes kind of consistently. Not heavily, but you do get a little bit of black puff out the back.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't that bad once it cleared when I followed you to the MOT.
I mean, I've filled the tank right up with fresh diesel and I've put a squirt of Miller's additive in it and I've changed the fuel filter.
That'll help.
It still is a bit wispy, but I think that's just how they are, to be honest. Mid-80s, you know, DPFs weren't a thing then. But I am waiting for someone to comment and say, "Oh, smoking really badly. How dare you drive that around?" And
it's not that bad.
Do you not think?
No, I followed it for 20 miles to the MOT.
Yeah.
And it was not great for the first 5 or 6 miles, but that was the first time it had been down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. 10 or 12 years. Yeah.
And it wasn't bad. It was bad. Okay. If it was bad, it wouldn't have passed its MOT.
No, true. Although, yeah, the rules aren't the strictest for vehicles of that age. But I'm just conscious because I've got the passenger side mirror set just so I can see the exhaust, and when you're accelerating it does puff a bit, but over, you know, overrunning when you're cruising it's not too bad.
No.
I'm just waiting.
Imagine if all cars were like that on the roads today.
I know,
be bad, wouldn't it?
It would be bad.
It'd be like living in the 80s all over again.
Then again, how many other of those, you know, modern stuff with EGR valves, DPFs, AdBlue, how many of them are going to get to 40 years old?
None.
No, they'll be squashed, won't they?
They don't engineer that into them, do they?
No.
They don't want 40-year-old cars.
No. Well, unlucky, because my 2.5 diesel 110's not going anywhere.
40 years, can you imagine? That'd be like properly old.
Yeah. Well, my Series 3 is 10 years older than that, so that's 50 years old now. Crazy, isn't it, to think that vehicle's 50 years old?
Yeah.
That's well old. Nice. It's almost as old as you.
Thanks.
Poor old Series 3 is not really, because I've been a bit slightly obsessed with the 110.
What's your new toy?
The last run the Series 3 had was probably Billing.
So that's a month ago then?
Yeah, I need to go green laning in it. I'm trying to nail something down with Neil to go and explore some local lanes and do another guide, because as you said earlier with the Yorkshire green lane trip we did, that'll be in the magazine next week.
Yes.
Really, really good fun. And like you were just like, it reminds you why we have like vehicles that are capable of doing more than just driving on tarmac.
No, 100%. Yeah, no, that was well worth the drive up, that was.
Yeah.
I don't recall seeing my invite for the local lanes screaming.
It's because we haven't planned it yet.
Okay.
Chill.
That's all right.
You'll get an invite.
Thanks, man.
Well,
appreciate that.
The local ones are a bit tighter, though. Obviously, Yorkshire, they're all quite open. So we'll have to be a bit mindful of the, don't want to scratch a paint really, on the 90.
Like scratchy lanes.
Yeah. Yeah, so
a bit of trimming back though, couldn't we?
Yeah, we could do. We can bring the old secateurs, do a bit of gardening along the way.
Yeah, a little bow saw or something and chop the bigger stuff away.
Yeah, because there's some decent lanes around here, but they're obviously seasonal. But because we've had such a dry spell up to now.
You need to make the most of it, because that'll soon change.
Yeah, definitely. But no, it's exciting. And the Series 3, like I said, I really enjoy driving it. Since having that demand exhaust, it's really transformed it. The You kind of, I don't know, it feels a bit more special now because you've got the
sound. It sounds like it's worth it makes, fuel consumption.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. No, I'm really, really chuffed.
Which is
it.
When I had my Stage 1 V8, had a completely standard exhaust and it just didn't sound good enough.
Yeah.
It sounded too like reserved, thinking all of the fuel consumption or lack of fuel consumption and none of the drama, none of the theatre.
Very muted.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell you what I have done. In a moment of boredom, probably. I think it might have even been when I was over yours and you went out to get some lunch. I started a Facebook group. I've added you to the Facebook group.
I'm in it. Awesome.
Mate, our first ever podcast on the LRM podcast was all about wheels and tyres, and probably my favourite tyre ever, the Michelin XCL, as seen on the military Land Rovers and the Camel Trophy.
Weirdly, it's my favourite tyre of all time as well. I don't even know you would share the same like favourite tyre, but
I can't understand my obsession, but it clearly...
Do you know what I reckon it is? It reminds me of your radio control car tyres.
Maybe.
Because they had their little studded sort of pattern.
They're like a, yeah, offset tread. Really cool.
So cool.
And I thought to myself, these are getting a bit rare and a bit special. I'm going to start a Facebook group. That's exactly what I did. So if you want to come and perv over...
Geek out
over Michelin XCLs.
Can XZLs be...
No, they're too new, sorry. We don't allow that.
Someone's tried to creep in with an XZL.
Common XZLs around, have they?
Yeah.
I'll have to bring my ban hammer out and moderate them.
I own like two XZLs on my Penman trailer.
There's nothing wrong with the XZL, but it doesn't look as iconic as an XZL.
No, it's not iconic. And I think, do you know what? It's because of the camel trophy.
Yeah, that has a lot to do with
that's
it.
That's why.
John Masters, whose discovery we had on the cover last year, I think, he's got new, I think they're 650 XCLs on his disco, and they're just like, oh.
What year did they stop making the Michelin XCL?
Don't know. Must have been early 90s, I'd have thought.
So they could never make that tyre again, though.
Well, this is it. I jokingly comment...
Does Michelin think...
I jokingly comment on lots of Instagram posts say tagging Michelin in and saying day X of
there's
asking three, Michelin...
There's 35 members here desperate for you to remake the tyre.
Please bring it back out. My first 110 I had when I was 18... Oh, no. Of course it wouldn't.
Yeah.
That had XCLs on it. They were really worn out. I think maybe that's why I love them so much, because it reminds me of my old green 110 that my mate christened Log for some reason, probably because it was green and covered in moss. But that thing was, considering how worn the XCLs were, you drive down the road and they would howl at 30 mile an hour.
I love the sound that they make at that
speed. They sound
wicked.
But off-road,
yeah.
They must have been approaching the legal limit or in the middle. They still had a reasonable chunky tread on the outside. They were unstoppable off-road. Cracking tyres. So you can see why they used them.
I had them on my ex-military 90, and that went through places all around the Wadden off-road course.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I did get stuck, to be fair, but I was in a muds complete swamp. And, there's not a lot that would stop them.
By the time you listen to this podcast, this probably won't be a thing. But at the moment, there is a brand new one for sale on eBay. One brand new one. And the same seller is selling one in excellent condition, but not brand new.
How much is it?
Well, the not brand new, but excellent condition is £78. And the brand new one is £156.
It's cracking on, isn't it?
It's quite a bit of money, but when...
But for a spare, like a spare, to go on the back, to look like...
Look the part.
It'll look good, aesthetically pleasing.
The thing I had in mind was if you were to buy them and just put them away somewhere dark so the UV didn't get to them, at some point more will come up for sale. Before you know it, you could have a nearly new set of XCLs.
For about £600 or £700.
But you can't put a price on nostalgia. Well, you can, about £600.
Yeah.
But, I don't know what it is. I just love the old tread patterns. Whenever a set of the Federman Maximas used to come up for sale, like the old Firestone Sat pattern, but the remold radial, whenever they came up, I'd have to go and buy them just because they look so cool.
You are a bit of a tyre obsessive.
I've got a slight problem. I've been good recently, but...
Well, define recently.
Well, I bought that set of...
You last bought a set of tyres only about 2 months ago.
Yeah, but I needed
That's
them.
Not that... You haven't been good recently.
That
You've
is...
Been... In your world of tyre
fetish.
That's
quite recent.
You have a tyre fetish?
I do a bit, yeah. Yeah. The General Super All Grips, by the way, still performing excellently, as I'm sure Greg will also.
Yeah, they do look the part.
A test. I think they... I haven't tried them. Obviously, it's been dry as a bone, but when it gets slightly colder and slightly wetter, I really want to... I want to see if their performance lives up to the memory I've got of them on the old 110 that I learned to drive in, the farm where my dad worked. Because that's my, like, such a strong memory of just how well they dug. Oh, great on the road, though, for a mud tyre. Very impressed.
The first Land Rover that I ever had anything to do with was, in fact, it's on my Instagram page, probably one of the first pictures I put on there, was the thing my uncle built with his mate.
Craig. Yes, yes.
That had V-grips.
What are V-grips?
Dumper tyres.
Oh, right, yeah.
On, like, 750 size. And that thing, loaded up with logs, was unstoppable.
I bet.
I mean, we're talking really deep mud ruts.
Mm.
That thing was unstoppable.
A good mate.
That's a 9-year-old kid. I was like, oh my God.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
I was going to say, a good friend of mine had he had a Discovery 2 that he used to trailer around to pay and play sites back when we used to do quite a bit of off-roading, like our little friendship group. And that, he bought dumper tyres for that, 750 dumper tyres. And that was like, the problem with dumper tyres is, A, they're not road legal, really. B, once they start spinning, which you do have to work quite hard to get them spinning, but the whole vehicle just sinks. It just digs to the earth's core, and there's no stopping.
And they're not very good in reverse, are they? If you had to reverse out of something.
And well, I don't know, actually. Because you see some people on, like, some vehicles mount them backwards, so I don't know the science behind it, but
hey,
I do remember, because they're only a 750, you don't get that much room under the diffs. Like,
oh, I think you meant that much of a V. 750s, you wouldn't, they're not that wide.
They're not very wide. And he actually, in the end, got rid of them and went to Insta-Turbo Special Tracks 285 75s, which sit about 33 or 34 inches tall. And that was primarily to get more room under the diffs. But he ended up cutting the back off that at work in his lunch break and bobtailing it. And he christened it the Bodge Tail because it was incredibly badly done. But my word, it was good off-road. Yeah.
Wow.
He's a mechanic.
Yeah.
But yeah, he just took a saw to it one day and shortened it up and put the fuel tank in the back. And it was incredibly good off-road. And he had winches front and rear. What a thing. Do you know what else I saw earlier on today, talking of bobtails? Suffix A Range Rover, so a really early classic Range Rover, but it was a trayback, and I thought, I'm torn on this. On one hand, Suffix A Range Rover Classic, very, very cool, very early.
When did you see this, sorry?
For sale,
okay.
Facebook, I think it was yesterday. Would you keep it like that, or would you restore it back to a full body? I'm on the fence, because on one hand, it's kind of part of its history.
It's probably been longer as a trayback than it was a Suffix A.
Yeah, possibly.
You know, it probably was done in the 80s or 90s.
It didn't say in the ad when it was done.
Yeah, I bet that spent longer of its life. That's its new look.
What I would say, it wasn't like a ratty bobtail like the Disco 2 Bodge Tail, but it was like truck cabbed, but with a metal, like an aluminium tray on the back, quite similar, you know, like you see in like Australia quite a lot, that sort of thing.
The days of that being an original car are over.
Yeah.
Like, so even if you did convert it back to an original looking Suffix A, it isn't actually the original Suffix A. So
yeah,
its originality is gone.
Yeah, I see what
you mean. I would probably, yeah, it's funny, isn't it? Somebody cutting that up back in the day probably didn't think one day this is going to be worth a fortune.
There's a great tale, actually, a guy we had featured in the MAGA probably last year now, Rich Hudson, who runs Church House Classics. He did a project called Bob, and it was called Bob because it was it wasn't really nice when he got it, but it was a bobtailed Range Rover Classic, and he essentially unbobtailed it, so stitched the roof back together.
Yeah.
We've done an amazing job. But yeah, I don't know. But talking of Suffix A Range Rovers and early classics, two doors, be sure to get the next issue of Land Rover Monthly, which is on sale next Wednesday, because Tim Hammond, resident Range Rover expert, has done an absolutely brilliant spot.
Oh, you showed me that on the proofs earlier when you submitted them to the printers. You were going through it, weren't you?
Really, really, really cool. Like, all the details and all the little bits to look for when you're either going to look at, buy, or identify an early classic Range Rover two-door. Because there's more to it than you might think.
I bet there is.
much like the early coilers.
I've learned something. I didn't know about the glow light. I didn't know about the ashtray.
It's it's amazing. It's funny because like you can tell Land Rover were finding their feet and like they were trying things and changing things all the time. So it's I don't know. I've never been that bothered about, and it sounds terrible, never been that bothered about the history as much, but now I'm really finding myself getting into it.
Do you know why?
Why?
You're coming of age.
Maybe,
It happens when you get older, you start to focus on, because not many youngsters, I'm not saying you're a youngster, but because you're certainly not.
Yeah, thanks, mate.
You might have been 10 or 15
years. Still got 10 years on me, you old.
Yeah, I have, yeah. But the older you get, the more, I suppose, respect you have for the cars and the originality, and you start to geek out and you remember things from back in your day when they were new on the road. And yeah, it does happen with age, I think, because there are not many people in their early 20s that care. They'll be bobtailing things but there are quite some younger people actually coming through, aren't there?
There are, definitely. Definitely.
You featured those guys from Oundle, didn't you?
Oh, yes. Artifact Automotive.
Yeah. So I read that yesterday. I'm behind the times on reading the mag.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
But they do
fabulous story.
High-end refurbished Defenders that are, you know.
But they're 20 years old.
Yeah, they're smashing it. They're doing amazing.
With their own business. I mean, it's brilliant.
Yeah, fair play to them. And everything's in-house. Everything they do is under that roof. It's amazing. A lot of their stuff comes from Singapore, ex-military Singapore Land Rovers.
Yeah, so their vehicle that's starting with is a better condition than, say, buying something out of a hedge in the UK.
Yeah, which, to be fair, it's not hard to get a better conditioned motor than that. But Singapore seems to be a good untapped source of these very nice 110s predominantly.
Mm. Give me a game away now. There'd be none left.
Sorry.
Every single listener.
But yeah, no, they're doing an amazing job, and fair play to them because, I mean, I think everyone should have a go at doing their own thing at some point in their lives, and they are not wasting any time.
No, definitely. Anyway, time is ticking on, and it's probably time that I went and painted some more bracketry on my project.
Probably, yeah. I need to make a move.
Because we have definitely gone into overtime now.
I need to go and read more about early coil sprung Land Rovers.
Yeah. But anyway,
I'll be back next week with more nuggets of information.
Yeah. Can you come in, actually? Because I think it's quite interesting.
I'll have to definitely. I'll have to look into some other books I've got and sort of wheedle out a few little tidbits of trivia that I can sort of dangle in front of people and say, yeah, you should definitely go out and buy a few more books and things, because they are just packed with goodness.
I think you forget, like, so many Land Rover books out there, but some really good ones.
Definitely. Yeah. And of course, Land Rover Monthly Magazine, not
overlooked. Well, you've given, like, two really good reasons to go and buy it. So you've got the Green Laning up in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
With us lot.
Cracking day.
Really
great.
Really
good fun.
And with all the
The Spotters Guide and the tech section. The tech section just goes from strength to strength. We've got some great contributors on at the moment. It's information you can trust, which is not what you can say about a lot of what you find on the internet. So do us a favour, buy the magazine, subscribe. Subscribe, it's the way forward.
You get it delivered, saves you money, all that good stuff. And on that note, I think we'll call it and we'll see you again next week.
Yeah, see you next week.